Good afternoon, Los Angeles, and all of Southern California. I'm Farley Malaris, and you're listening to Astrological Metaphysical Radio, the phenomenon of the 80s. Also known as the Astrology Hour, on KFOX, 93.5 FM, your talk alternative. And a happy Monday afternoon or whatever to you, Southern California. This is Farley Malaris. Welcome to an exciting edition. A lot of people are addicted to Mondays because it's a no-forecast Monday again. We're going to open the lines to general questions, general comments on metaphysics, karma, philosophies of God, truth, search for further truth, anything concerning open-mindedness, hopefully to make a positive, confident comment on whatever, and of course, we do love to have you participate on a no-forecast Monday. Well, Friday's show was kind of trippy, because I did predict this quake on Saturday morning between 6 and 8 a.m. I did say Saturday or Sunday between 6 and 8 a.m., and we did have a 3.5, I think, centered in Malibu. I was jolted awake at 7 in the morning Saturday. I went to bed thinking, well, there's going to be a quake tomorrow. Usually when L.A.'s chart is lit up and the heat hits, it seems like the combination definitely does create earthquake aspects that can be very intense. Not only is this the spring and the vernal equinox week and the Easter week and all that, a lot of things are happening. I notice that birds are breeding like crazy right now. My canary laid 3 eggs. I thought, oh my gosh. And a lot of animals right now are breeding. A lot of people are falling into love and many other people are falling out of love. There's lots of karmic processing going on considering some of the planetary aspects. So these are very exciting times. And I'm happy to hear, I think I heard that there was a peace plan in Nicaragua and that the United States was pulling the troops out of Honduras. So a lot of positive aspects going on with the energies right now, astrologically speaking. I know a lot of you may be interested or curious about the earthquakes or my particular technique in predicting them. I think my technique in predicting the earthquakes is a combination of astrological knowledge, intuition, and help from my guides. So if you would like me to publish a book on the science of earthquake prediction, forget it. All you can do is listen to the Astrology Hour to try to figure out exactly when and where the next quake is going to be. At least I'm not calling for an earthquake watch today, so things should be cool. Okay, welcome to Monday edition of KFOX 93.5, the Astrology Hour, Astrological Metaphysical Radio. Let's go to the phones now and answer your questions. Alexis is first. Hi, Alexis. Alexis, are you there? You're on the air. You there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, what can we do for you?
I wanted to know if you believe there was a hell. Do you believe there's a hell? Where do you believe people go after they get off the circle of reincarnation? Or after they become higher selves, or if they don't get to that point?
Okay, this is an excellent question. How old are you, Alexis, can I ask?
I'm 22.
22. Do you think there's a hell?
I'm sure there must be some place that people go that aren't worthy to, you know, they can't stay on Earth forever. I mean, do you believe Earth, in a way, is hell?
Okay, now this is what I do believe. I do believe that there's what is called a multiverse. You know, more than just a universe, there's a multiverse, which is made up with an infinite number of creative possibilities. And amongst those possibilities, I do believe that there is what is called a hell on Earth, in that a human being could manifest a life situation that could be like unto hell or even worse than, depending on the city or the country they're born in, depending on the political situation in that country, depending on the food situation, the economic situation, and obviously the health situation. Because, for example, in Ethiopia, I believe in East Africa, there's a tremendously higher precedence, for example, of AIDS and starvation and leprosy and such. So obviously being born in Ethiopia may be a much more of a difficult lesson than perhaps being born in Orange County or something like that. So number one, I do believe that there is a hell on Earth that can be manifest depending on how negative a person can be, like the prisons, like in the hospitals, certain mental institutions, family situations and such, for sure. I also believe that, yes, if a person is negative and satanic enough, and they're into a devil worship or a demonic worship, and after life on Earth, they actually manifest that type of ending, that there has been a place reserved in the multiverse for people that are so evil and so into negative manifestation, like devil and Satan worshipers, that they can actually manifest that type of existence in a certain segment of the multiverse, which frankly is beyond my own personal scope of reference. This is not something that I normally dwell on or think about because I prefer to keep this type of creative manifestation totally out of my mind, okay, and out of my creative process. But I don't believe that innocent people or that people that are God-fearing and believe in the God force and the oneness of God are susceptible to being pulled into this multiverse. I may be wrong. You know, there may be spells that could be cast or in-depth, intense witchcraft situations where people may be vulnerable and susceptible if they're not into what I call psychic self-defense, because I do believe there is a war going on between good and evil, and even though good is supposed to be somewhat vulnerable, I do believe that good must be strong to overcome evil. Because it's like in a war, for example, the forces of good can defeat the forces of evil because the wars are usually fought on terms of evil, which usually involve guns and weapon. Sometimes the forces of good, for example, like the Allied forces in World War II, would have to resort to using weapons, guns, and ammunition to defend the freedom, to defend what they believe is the truth. And in that way, it's almost like resorting to hellish type instruments in order to overcome evil. So I do believe that good does have to be strong and sometimes may need to resort to self-defense and forms of hostility in order to overcome evil. Does that help you any?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye. I don't believe that there's anything like hell as stipulated in the Bible. I do believe that if you blow your karma and you don't really adhere to your reincarnation cycle of karmic growth and evolution of the soul, that what happens is you can have a setback in your reincarnation cycle and be born as a lower form human, and that could be like a hellish existence. That's a good question. Let's go to Kathy now on line two. Hi, Kath.
Hi, Farley.
That was a heavy question. I can't wait to hear what number two is going to be like.
Yeah, well, no, mine's not quite so heavy.
Okay.
I don't think. I've been kind of toying with this tarot workbook, and it says kind of basically what the cards have been indicating is that I have sort of a life that sort of gave me kind of an initiation.
You're having a what? What is this?
This lifetime is supposed to be sort of an initiation of some sort.
From your tarot workbook you picked this up?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And I was going, wow. And I was just wondering if there's anything you could find in an astrological chart that might indicate that.
I think everything in life is like an initiation. I think everything in life offers an opportunity for rebirth, growth, and spiritual evolvement. And when you reach that point of crossover, where you become more intuitive, more vulnerable, and more aware of the vibrations in this universe, which, like our last call revealed, are not always positive, because being psychic or being powerful or being evolved has a heavy responsibility because you become more empathetic, not only to beings in this level, but also to people suffering in the limbo state, and also maybe some like poltergeist-type spirits that may exist. So frankly, anyone can call anything an initiation. So as far as I'm concerned, it's just a bunch of rubble, you know.
This sounded more like, you know, it's like initiation, not just of, you know, ordinary things, sort of a special initiation of some sort.
Yeah, well, I don't go with it myself.
Uh-huh.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Let's go to Diane now. Hi, Diane.
Hi, Farley.
How are you?
Oh, I'm fine. I've heard the term bright white light of the Christ, you know, from you, and from other programs on KFOX, they use the term white light of the Christ, and that I understand, but perhaps I've misunderstood, but I heard on the program before yours, she used the term and then specified that we are to surround ourselves with the bright light of the Christ and to keep the negative energies out of our lives. Now, perhaps I misunderstood what she was saying, but I think that we need both the positive and the negative in our lives so that we can learn and grow.
Mm-hmm. I didn't hear the show before us, number one, but number two, yes, I do believe that the white light of God, you know, more than just the Christ, is an important part of the aura that is necessary that we identify and imagine and accept and believe and will, that we are covered, surrounded by this snowball of white energy. And you are right. The third dimension is a negative energy or anti-God dimension. Like beyond this dimension, the illusion of separation and the illusion of uniqueness disappears and the oneness becomes more obvious. So beyond this dimension, I believe it's more like a Christ dimension or a messianic force. And this dimension is like the Antichrist or the negative dimension. So it's like we live in the negative down here on Earth. So it's kind of difficult to remove all elements of the negative. You relate to that?
Yes, I can relate to that. But what I was getting at was by asking to eliminate the negative, how can you grow? You need that, the negative in our lives to grow with, don't you?
Yeah, I think probably she was referring more to evil and to negative emphasis on hostility. As far as negative vibrations are concerned, that's a normal part of the human structure, so it's kind of difficult to totally remove all negative influence, as you know, and once you do, you go beyond this dimension. Okay, thank you, Diane.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. All right, interesting little questions today. Let's go to Angie on line 4. Hi, Ange.
Hi, Polly. How are you?
Real good. Thanks for calling.
I called you one other Monday. I'm your female equivalent out there in the world.
Oh, all right. Then you got a tough lesson, kid.
Right.
Okay, well, what's your question? The Leo, Libra, Rising, Scorpio, Moon?
Right.
Okay.
Here's my question. I'm confused about, this is an astrology question, the difference between, if there is one, detriment and fall and exaltation and rulership.
Mm-hmm. Well, if a planet is ruled by a certain sign, like the Sun ruling Leo, or like Mars ruling Aries or Jupiter ruling Sagittarius, it is said that planets placed in signs they rule do quite well. It's like being at home. That's why Leo energy is so extrovert and Jupiter in Sag is so philosophical and Mars in energy is very hyper and high energy, just like Pluto in Scorpio is very passionate. Now, if a planet is exalted in a sign, like the Moon in Taurus, for example, or like Jupiter in Cancer, then it does better. It's much more at home and does even better than the ruling planets do.
But how do you know it? Like, I thought the Moon was exalted in Taurus, but somebody said, oh, no, the Moon's exalted in Cancer, and they said that exaltation and rulership were the same thing.
No way. The Moon rules Cancer, and it is exalted in Taurus forever, as far as I know. And if anyone told you that, it's horse rubble. But, like, there are some planets that when they're in detriment, like let's say if Mars is in a sign opposite Aries, Libra, then it doesn't do well there. Like Mars and Aries people normally are high energy. I have Mars in Libra, which is mental energy and low in the physical scale. That's why physically I can get burned out or tired quicker, even if I have Mars in the ascendant or in the first house, which is what I do have Mars on the ascendant in the 12th house. It's like having Sun in Aquarius is in detriment because it's opposite the sign of Leo, which is where the Sun is ruled.
Okay, so you find out where the detriment is.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Let me triple check while I'm talking to you. Also, planets do their worst. It's like a ruling planet in its own sign does okay. A planet in exaltation does better, stronger. If a sign's in detriment, then some of the energy is cut down. It's like almost halved. And if a planet is in fall, it's in bad shape. Like the Moon in Scorpio, for example, is in fall. So emotionally, people with Scorpio moons have a much heavier lesson, I would think, than most other people. Let me give you an example. Like Saturn rules Capricorn, it's in detriment in the opposite sign, Cancer. It's exalted in Libra, and it's in fall in Aries. That's why people with Saturn in Libra make such good counselors for other people, but not such good counselors for themselves. Like Jupiter rules Sagittarius, it's in detriment to the opposite sign, Gemini. It's in fall in Capricorn, and it's exalted in Cancer. Like Mars also rules Aries, and is exalted in Capricorn. It doesn't do well in the sign opposite Aries, Libra, it's in detriment. Then Mars is in fallen Cancer. So you can pick up The Complete Astrologer by Derek Parker.
Complete Astrologer.
Right, and that'll give you all the planets with the signs they rule, the detriments, the falls. And, for example, Venus is also exalted in Pisces, rules Taurus and Libra, in detriment in Aries and in fall in Virgo.
What's the difference between detriment and fall?
Well, detriment means that the planetary energy, the karma there, is a little bit more severe than normal. And if a planet is in fall in a sign, it's much more severe. Like, detriment is just to the left of fall where a planet is hurting. Too many planets in fall in a person's chart can create lots of confusion, lots of heavy karma, and sometimes pain that is not needed. Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
On No Forecast Mondays, I don't do a topic because the whole show is like 30 topics. Because some of the questions we get, like we got a question on hell, on tarot, on white light, now on things a lot of people wonder about that they're thinking about. So the Astrology Hour definitely is a class when you, the students, take Mondays to ask me the questions that need answering besides just forecasts. But anyway, if you're interested in getting more involved in the show, the Astrology Hour is a public-supported show to take this show more like a correspondence course. Okay, now we are ready to go back to the phones and have some more fun. Let's go to Carol now on line 5. Hi, Carol.
Hi.
Thank you for calling.
My question is, hold on, I wrote it down. Okay.
How does the city's karma affect your own personal karma, and can you change your karma by moving?
Well, that's a good question. Number one, you'd have to get the date, the time, and the city of inception. The date, time, and of course we know where the city is. The date and the time of the inception of the city to cast the chart of the city. And then you could run a compatibility if you want, like a synastry where you can compare all the planets in the city's chart to all the planets in your chart. You just treat the city like a big entity. A lot of times, if the city's chart trines your Venus quite well, or your second house lord, it could show more money, more love in that city. Or if you're looking for men or women, if you got trines to your Mars from the city's chart, it would show more relationships with men. Trines to the Venus show more relationships with women. And, of course, squares and oppositions to those planets would show that city being more karmic, as far as that goes. Now, I have access to LA's chart, which is a Virgo, and I don't readily have it in my hands right here, but if somebody wanted to do a compatibility between themselves and LA, I think we could do that.
But there's
not too many other cities I could do unless someone gave me the date and the time of that inception of that city.
Inception, you mean like when the city began?
Yeah, you know, the founding of the settlement. Like the founding of the settlement of Los Angeles, I think, happened in the 17 or 1800s in September, and somebody got that time for me. Okay?
Okay.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Bye.
Bye.
All right, that's an interesting question. Let's go to Dave now on line number 6. Hey, Dave.
Hello.
You're on the air.
How's it going?
Real good?
Good.
Is this Boja?
Yeah.
All right, Boj.
Nice to talk to you.
You need some books maybe, huh?
Yeah.
you might want to call Monica and check.
Okay, no problem.
We've used thousands of books from you by now, I think, haven't we?
That's terrific.
Thank you for your help, Guy.
Sure. So I was looking through the planetary positions for May, and I was curious. I noticed that Venus was going retrograde about May 22nd.
Yeah.
In early Cancer.
Right.
So I was wondering what kind of effect that would have being opposed to Saturn and Uranus.
Well, the Venus retrograde that goes on May 22nd is pretty volatile because it's going to be at zero Cancer for quite a long time, which will be exactly opposite Uranus, and there's another peak there for earthquake possibilities. Not only because of the Venus retrograde at zero Cancer, but also at the same time, we have Mars in Aquarius, which is an earthquake placing too. Excuse me, because it's square the Sun at that time. Mars is square the Sun on May 17th. So we will be placing Southern California on an earthquake watch for sure all of May. But if we hadn't had the quake by the 15th, we're going to put a little bit more emphasis around that period.
Mm-hmm.
It's also a political unrest situation too for the planet, because Uranus and Saturn are both involved. So we'll check world events and current events and headlines at that point.
Right. So just like when Mercury goes retro, there's problems with communications and breakdowns, mechanical breakdowns. What are the symptoms for Venus?
Well, when Venus goes retrograde, there's usually love breakdowns and financial problems, and also problems concerning values and situations as far as what things are worth or what the price or what the value is placed on things.
Mm-hmm.
So there's lots of review going on with people at that period, Venus opposed Saturn, Venus opposed Uranus, as far as relationships they have established, or empires, or assets they have created, or love desires and wishes. A lot of people born in the early 50s are going to be going through the ropes during May for sure.
Right.
Okay, thank you, Guy.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. Let's go to line number 8, Lisa. Hi, Lisa.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm pretty new at this, and my question is, I'm a Leo with Leo rising, and what does that mean to me?
The three major aspects of any chart are the sun sign, the moon sign, and the rising sign. So when a person has 2 out of 3 in the same sign, we call them a double. Like if you had sun in Virgo and moon in Virgo and rising in Pisces, you'd be a double Virgo with Pisces rising. Because we use the three majors to identify people. That's why when I go to the phones on forecast day, sometimes I'll say, we're going to George, who's a Pisces with Gemini rising, or we're going to Ruth, who's a triple Gemini, or we're going to a Valerie, who's a double Virgo with Capricorn sun. So if you have 2 of your 3 majors in Leo, you're a double Leo. What's your other aspect?
Moon in Virgo.
So you would be a double Leo with a Virgo moon. And that's how you might be identified at one point in the future. You know, like if you were going to meet somebody, instead of saying, hi, my name is Lisa, and I'm a Leo, you'd say, I'm Lisa, double Leo with Virgo moon. And right away, somebody into astrology would go, oh, you know, and they'd get a major impact on your soul, your personality, and your emotions by knowing your three majors. Okay?
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Let's go to Dave on line 1. Hi, Dave.
Hi, Farley. I wanted to just offer a general comment, or actually relates to couple shows you did last week about square and trine transits. And it's just about a transit I'm undergoing right now, which is Saturn directly squaring my sun. And I had been pretty nervous about this transit and had read a lot of information in different...
Were you frightened that there might be a negative effect, Dave?
Oh, real frightened.
Yeah, when you look at a square and opposition transit, you can't look at the negative. What you have to look at is what the universe is showing you to change or to alter. I think the problem a lot of people have is they're afraid of trauma or adversity or hostility or negativity, and what you can do is actually manifest that. See, knowing astrology is one thing, but then expecting negative vibrations during a square in opposition, which is something I hope people don't misinterpret from my teaching because I get freaked out over them, is something that can actually make things worse.
Right. Well, this particular transit, I had a lot of things happening before the transit actually came down, but right now I'm busier and making more money than I have in like the last 6 months. I had an extreme emotional situation, which is really getting clarified, and I can see logically these steps that I have to do to accomplish these certain goals, and this all came about with this Saturn transit. And it's like, wow, you know, it's almost like you would expect with a trine.
Yeah, I had a moon trine my Uranus one day exact, and I got rear-ended. Created more problems. I thought, hey, wait a minute, trines are supposed to be good, but not always. Actually, I did get a nice settlement from the accident, so that was the moon trine Uranus, but I got a little crick in my neck, too. Thanks, Dave.
Okay.
Bye. Let's go to Jean on line 5. Hi, Jean.
Hello.
Thank you for calling.
Hi. Well, let's see here. I don't know if you've seen the public service announcement where there's this jock on TV and he's saying that be kind to your animals and have them spayed and neutered. So I was wondering, what's the karmic implication of spaying and neutering it?
I don't know. God, if the aliens took over this planet and made pets out of humans, can you see ads that say, be kind to your humans, have them spayed and neutered? You know, like, doesn't seem to sound too cool to me.
Kind to me.
Yeah, I don't know. Gosh, seems to me that having your tubes tied or something should be a decision left to the individual. I would more think I would probably rather keep my animal indoors or somehow fenced up to prevent the pregnancy, much rather than put them through the surgery thing. Although some people would argue with that, it's like karmically thinking, Gene, if you had your animals all spayed and neutered, would that mean that you would come back as a cat or a dog and that someone would have you spayed and neutered afterwards?
I hope not.
You know, because the karma usually is a total reverse of the energy that is set out.
Absolutely. So maybe somebody did it to me in the past, and that's why I'm so against it now.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I would probably put up a struggle. If someone came in the room and said, Farley, we're going to have your tubes tied, oh, you would see a real violent reaction if somebody tried to do that to me. So I can't comment on it objectively, but I don't like it. You know, I don't think it, I don't feel it's karmically sound. But, you know, there's a lot of questions on abortion and other things that a lot of people wonder about karmically, too, that are hard to figure out.
All the same kettle of fish.
Anything to do with surgery in my book is pretty weird. And nobody's going to operate on me, I hope. Okay, thank you, Jean.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, that was an interesting question. Let's go to Anne now on line 2. Hello, Anne.
Hi, Farley.
Thanks for keeping me company. I got lonely for a while there.
Oh, well, thank you. I have a question for you, but I wanted to just ask a quick one in regard to what you were just speaking about, the karma.
Oh, yeah?
And my thought on that is, wouldn't it have something to do with the intention by which you do what it is you do, how the outcome of the karma would be?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, for sure. Definitely.
So that if you feel that you're doing something with the best integrity, that that would work out a lot differently than if you just wanted to get away from the hassle of not having your dog having to deal with babies or coming into heat and that kind of stuff?
What I do know, what I have found out, is that if we don't spay and neuter a lot of the animals, then the pet population soars and a lot of animals are then exterminated.
Right.
So it's like damned if you do and you're damned if you don't type situations. It's a little touchy. And fortunately, I'm not the judge of this sort of thing, so I'm glad I'm not.
Yeah, okay, I just used that as an example, but I meant generally, it would make a difference with what intention you did what it is you were doing.
I believe so, yes.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, let's go over here to Michelle on line 1. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, Farley. What a delight to speak with you. My question is about careers and mapping careers through the chart. Do you always do it with the midheaven?
Well, the thing I like most about the careers is that once a month the moon will go into the 10th house. And what you can do is you can look at your 10th house, which is just to the left of the midheaven for 30 degrees, and see if there are any areas in that 10th house that pick up a trine or a sextile from another planet in your chart, when planets go into that zone.
Uh-huh.
See what I mean? So usually there are, and when that happens, I do find that career surges and promotions and positive changes do element. Now also, I also find that karmic situations that can propel you into growth and career, like picking up squares or oppositions to planets going into the 10th, can also help propel you. Now, a lot of times there'll be people that'll be dealing with transits with careers that'll go on for years. Like Jupiter can be in your 10th house for a whole year, or like Mars will be there for like 2 months, or the Sun will be there for a month, and obviously a lot goes on when planets enter your 10th house. That's why whenever summertime hits and stuff starts going into Cancer and Leo, my career starts hopping because that's my 10th house.
Uh-huh. So is there a way to find out what your karmic responsibility career is by looking at a chart?
Well, you have to analyze what sign is on the midheaven, and then the epitome of what that sign bestows analyzed in a career fashion, like Cancer being more of a public sign, being more of a emotional sign, security, home, dealing with families, people into maternal instincts and such, Virgo being more of a health and service sign, a working sign, mechanics, engineering, such as that. You can almost interpret any of the 12 signs in a career mode. So understanding the midheaven energy and then planets you have in that house, combining that energy, then aspects to those planets, with emphasis on too many fixed signs in the chart, propelling you to your own personal authority, career management, or supervision, because those people don't do well working for others.
And it doesn't matter if those fixed signs are in the midheaven?
Right. If there's a fixed sign in the midheaven, usually you should try to be more your own boss.
Uh-huh.
Okay?
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Let's take David. Is that you, Dave?
Yeah, hi.
How are you?
Fine, how are you?
Fine, thanks for calling.
I've got a question sort of about, like I have called about the UFOs.
Okay.
I'm a real skeptic, but I'm really sort of interested in it, too. I was wondering if you could recommend a good book, or you mentioned documentation, where I might find that.
Well, it's really hard to recommend a book. I found most of my information on these computer modems, believe it or not. A lot of stuff is kind of passed around in the underworld, in the computer world. Some of this information and knowledge. I don't know. There's all kinds of stuff available at the Bodhi Tree on UFOs or at the Spectrum Bookstore. There's this book out called Communion that's very controversial. I don't know if I believe in that, but a lot of people talk about that guy as being kind of wild or weird. I got through part of that book, and then the rest of it seemed quite boring to me. But why don't you check out the UFO section at the Bodhi Tree, the extraterrestrial section, and see which one feels the best for you, and check that out, you know, and see what you get.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Okay.
Good luck. Bye-bye. Okay, and that is our show for today. I hope you enjoyed the No Forecast Edition, and we are a public-supported show. Thank you all for participating in and listening to the Astrology Hour No Forecast Monday. We'll see you real soon, weekdays on the Fox at 12 noon. Have a nice day. Bye.